Welcome to Small Business Big Network, the podcast for small business owners who want big results from their networking. I'm Liz Drury, a freelance voiceover artist who knows that if you're not working, then networking could help. Andy Brown is a speaker, a coach, a podcast host, and the author of The Emotional Overdraft. Andy says that networking allows you to create a personal board for your business to help keep you on track and out of emotional overdraft. Thank you very much for being my guest on the podcast today, Andy.
Oh, I can't wait for the conversation, Liz. I've listened to a few of your podcasts and I love this. There's so many takes on the idea of networking, and it's given me some pause for thought, so I'm looking forward to it.
Good, that's really nice to hear. So you're an author, a speaker, a coach, a podcast host, all sorts of things, but what has your career journey been? Where did you start, Andy?
I suppose where I most of my background is in advertising and creative and communication businesses, until I became too old to do that and became an advisor. But I started back in the day when I went to university. You got a grant or you didn't. And I didn't get a grant, but my parents also said, you're on your own, buddy. We're not going to chip in for very good reasons. And they couldn't afford it. And they were right not to help. Yeah. But I paid my way through university by doing research. And I was one of those people that would walk up to you in the street and say, excuse me, can you answer a few questions? And I did that for 4 years. The whole time I was at university, I calculated once I'd done about 20,000. it's called field interviews. And I was pretty good at it. And by the way, that if anyone's thinking, you know, I need to make a few more quid and I'll try that, the way you do it is you don't eyeball people too soon because they'll cross the road.
Yeah.
you don't jump out at them at the last minute. You ask the magic question, which is, I'd really value your opinion. And no one can walk past that. No one can go past, have you got a minute? No, I don't.
Yeah.
But I'd really value your opinion.
Yes.
Almost no one can go past it. And it's, well, there you are. So, yeah. You know.
It's like polls on LinkedIn, isn't it? People just can't scroll past and they've got to answer the question.
I really, really don't like polls on LinkedIn. They're so blatant. There's such an obvious device for getting stickiness and gathering. They're not interested in the information. They're interested in the people that click it and getting the data, aren't they? It seems to me. But
clickbait.
A clickbait indeed.
So what was it that brought you into the coaching space where you are now?
So I ran my own business. I set my own agency up and sold that. And then I worked for someone else's agency and did that two or three times in a row. And I think I got to the point where I'm very good at building, though I say so myself, at building businesses, building value in businesses. So not people talk about growth and they'll come to me and say, I want to grow our business. And I say, I don't think you do. I think what you want to do is build a more valuable business. And there's a lot of difference and we don't have time to go into it, but I'm good at building value in businesses. And I realized that if I was coaching and advising, then I could work with a handful of companies at the same time. Whereas when I was running businesses or being an MD or whatever, you're working in one business. And it's once you've done it a few times, you know, maybe 25, 30 years of it in my case, you just lose the appetite for doing it in a linear fashion. So doing it now, and I work with half a dozen clients with very different sorts of businesses, and it's fantastically exciting and diverting, and they have all sorts of different challenges, and it keeps me on my toes. That's how I ended up being a coach advisor.
Yeah. And how long have you been doing that for?
About 3 years before lockdown, and then I set up my own business on the 1st of April 2020, which was obviously at that point, you remember, was carnage.
Yes.
And my foundation three clients all phoned me up that day and said, Andy, I'm sorry, we're going to have to put everything on hold.
Yeah.
And I agreed with them. I every discretionary cost should go on hold as you go into a pandemic, as it turns out. And they were right. Yeah. But the really smart decision I made was to carry on working with them. And I said, you know, I'll have nothing to do. So why don't we just carry on with the engagement as if you were paying me money?
Mm.
I was lucky enough to be able to support myself a bit. And we carried on. And within 3 months, I'd learned an awful lot about how you manage a business through COVID. I'd managed to help those 3 clients. They bounced back. And we ended up, they ended up re-employing me, and I still work with those 3 clients. So it's worked well. So probably coaching for 5 or 6 years, maybe.
Yeah. And so who are your clients, and what kind of issues do they come to you with?
So they're mainly, well, they're all people-based businesses. Mm. So that's my skill is in, I don't know anything about factories or retail,
yeah,
or those sorts of businesses, but I know about businesses where they depend on people. So it's those clients. So I've got an advertising agency, an HR company, a research company, an innovations business, but they're all basically, they have people, they sell their people's mm-hmm. time and try and make a profit doing it that way. That's where I work. And that's also where my book, The Emotional Overdraft, came from, the insights from those businesses, which were people who were, what I realized people were doing was they were subsidizing their businesses at the cost of their own mental or physical wellness, yeah, or their own health. And being a researcher, and, you know, I was not a bad researcher, I did some actual research. And what I discovered is almost everybody who runs a small business or leads a small business has some form of emotional overdraft. They are subsidizing the business to some degree, and some people a lot. And that's when stress happens and burnout and overwhelm and all those awful things. So that's become an area of interest for me, because what I've discovered is if you can remove or reduce the emotional overdraft more often, then that frees up your capacity to have an impact as a leader or as a founder, entrepreneur. Mm. And if you can do that, then you can do almost anything. And that's the sort of release, I think, that's been the release for the clients I work with. Because I'm bringing some experience, but generally I'm bringing, a coach's job is to help release that sort of inner capability. So that's what I'm trying to bring to the table with my clients.
Yeah. So where did the phrase emotional overdraft come from?
Well, it came out of my head, because I talk in analogies and have done forever. So it felt to me like there was the emotional soft side of this, but the overdraft, the hard, tangible bit, and it seemed to fit really well together. Then once I started looking into it, I discovered that 2 or 3 people have talked about it over the last 20 years,
mm-hmm,
conceptually, because most analogies have been used before. But it came out of my head, really, as a concept. But there's an interesting tie into networking in here. I promise I'm not here to plug my book, and my publisher hates me when I say this, but I really don't care if people buy the book or not. What I'm interested in is people understanding that those feelings you get, that feeling of being pulled down by your own business, of it costing you, you know, when you stop taking exercise, when you don't see your kids as often as you used to, when you start to get ill, when you get stressed, there's all sorts of symptoms, that it's a real thing and you can do it differently. So that even just knowing it exists as a thing is important. But in relation to networking, and that's why I was really keen to talk to you, and I've enjoyed the podcasts, is because I think one of the really important things when you run a business, and I've run my own small business twice, and even now, I suppose, technically, I've got 2 staff. I run a small business. Is it so isolating?
Yeah.
And you can feel completely alone. And part of what I talk about with emotional overdraft is to develop a personal board, which you may have talked about before.
Mm.
But the concept of the personal board is to have some people you can lean on, a network who you can lean on, who have your best interests at heart. And they may or may not know you're on your personal board, but typically you'd have a coach, which this is not me plugging for work, because I have no capacity for more clients. So, you know, but a coach of some kind, a mentor, a peer who's sort of in your industry and knows how it works, but isn't your coach, a fitness coach, someone who you can lean on for advice about fitness, physical fitness, particularly a cheerleader, I think is really important. Someone who, and that's probably not your partner or your family, but it's someone who's always in your corner and always going to be cheering for you.
Yeah.
And that's a sort of network in its own right.
Yes.
And then I got thinking about, this is, none of this is in the book, and I really wish I'd thought about it before, but I was just fascinated to listen to people. You had someone on who was talking about a network. They built a creative, was it MCC or TCC?
TCC, yeah, yeah.
A creative community.
Creative collective, yeah.
Creative collective. But it's a community of people
yeah.
with similar sorts of challenges and similar sorts of businesses and skill sets.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's, again, if you're deep in your emotional overdraft and you're isolated and you're feeling, you know, all of these challenges, to simply plug into that is really powerful, and to know that it's not just you, and to know that other people are dealing with similar things, and there are some solutions, and to take yourself out of the day-to-day, you know, out of the weeds for a moment, I think that would be a fantastic way to start addressing
yeah.
some symptoms of emotional overdraft. So it just seemed to me that it was such a... This idea of networking, I think some people look at it and go, well, networking is... you know, you've got to go and walk up to people you don't know and say, hello, my name's Andy. Don't do that if your name is not Andy, because it will confuse people. But that isn't what networking is. Networking is making connections, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, I'm rabbiting on.
Yeah.
Apologies, Liz.
And I can't remember whether we spoke about this in the TCC episode or not, but something that the TCC have, apart from their networking meetings, is what they call their peer-to-peer basically support group. We have a WhatsApp chat, and once a month there's a Zoom call in an evening, and people can come along with an issue, a problem they want to discuss, and just be supported by the rest of the community. And that's really valuable, because like you say, you know, entrepreneurs, like, you know, solopreneurs like myself, we're working on my own all day every day, and it's great to know that there are other people out there that have got your back, basically.
Absolutely. And that's, I think, what I've discovered in the last few weeks whilst I've been listening to your podcasts is that network means a lot of things.
Mm.
And it can be used, it can be so useful. It's the connectivity of it. My family are huge Star Trek fans. I always think of the Borg when I talk about connectivity. The
yes.
Borg are these people that are all connected
yeah.
with one brain sort of thing, even though they're individuals. But not that necessarily that level of connectivity. But I've got clients at the moment who are creating what a brilliant marketing strategy right at the moment, which tells you something about society, is to if you have a group of clients who have common requirements or common challenges, my clients are creating communities or networks to allow those people to connect and to compare notes. And so it's a fabulous marketing tool, because it gives you the permission to be in all those conversations. So
yeah.
loads and loads of value in it for you. But it suggests again to me that we're looking for connection again. We're looking for permission to talk to other people and to get away from what we're doing on a day-to-day basis and communicating with different people in different ways with perfect permission and the permission to do it with no judgment as well, particularly where no one's going, oh, well, you're an idiot. But they might be thinking that sometimes, of course people are, but you know, where the people are there with the express purpose of giving you a platform to share your challenges.
Yeah, yeah. So how much networking do you do yourself? Presumably you do go places to sell your book, I'm assuming.
It's my publisher standing behind you. That sounds exactly like the thing she would say. Andy, get out there and do more networking. I do. Most of my... I thought deeply about this because I knew we were going to have the conversation. Most of my networking is on LinkedIn, which is... I don't know even if that counts as networking, but I think it does.
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
And it's where I'm of an age where I'm not still interested in developing my career. I've got lots of experience, and I've got things I know that I know are useful.
Mm-hmm.
I've got loads of things that are not useful, but some things that are useful. And so I'm in kind of sharing mode.
Yes.
So I'm not using LinkedIn to try and generate work. And that's a theme in the people who talk to you as well, where they're saying networking isn't necessarily just about generating work, and certainly not in the first
yeah.
conversation. But I'm using LinkedIn to to share what I know. And to do that, I have to network with people. I have to, it's effectively the same marketing strategy. It's the same technique, which is to identify people with a challenge where I think I can help, and then to connect with them in some way, in an authentic way, and then to strike up a conversation. And so that's mainly where I do it these days. But I'm also a member of two or three smaller networks of communities. So Agency Hackers is a fabulous community of agency leaders. I think he's got about 800 creative agencies involved in Agency Hackers. And there's lots of very similar things to TCC with one-to-ones and peer support and groups and workshops and all those sorts of things. So I'm in two or three of those groups as well. And that's worked incredibly well for me, because you talk to people and they go, oh, you should talk to someone else, and referrals and pushing on. So that's probably where I do most of my networking is through online platforms. I live in Dorset now. I used to live in the southeast and work in London, but I'm 59 in a few weeks, and I'm quite happy sitting in my little house and chatting to people like this rather than schlepping up to London to do all those things I used to do.
Sounds good to me. So what sort of reaction have you had from people regarding the book?
Oh, thank you for asking that. It's a very few people do. It's been brilliant, which is incredibly rewarding.
Yeah.
They call it your book baby, and you kind of you put it out there, and then you wait for judgment in a way. And so one level of assessment is the reviews on Amazon, and they've been very good.
Yeah.
Sales, I guess, is another method, but it's a little bit early because the book industry is so old fashioned. You get the figures months and months after they've actually happened.
Right.
But I know I've sold over 100 copies in Thailand, of all places. So something's gone on in Thailand. But generally I was going to say great, but it's tragic in a way, is the amount of people, the number of people that have contacted me. And there's a lady that runs a business emailed me 2 or 3 weeks ago and said that she goes into work and then she cries in the toilet every day. And I don't mean that's great to hear that. It's horrible to hear that. But I can imagine how she felt. I've been in a similar position myself back in the day. But that someone could say, to share that, feel they could share it, recognize it for what it is, and say the book had helped. Is fantastic. So I couldn't ask for more than that.
Yeah, it's clearly resonating with people.
I think so. And that's the point. You know, it's when I wrote it, actually, I mean, it's sort of a lecture on how you write a book. And if anyone's thinking about writing a book, do it. It's a fabulous thing to do. It's very rewarding. If you've got an ego as big as mine, it's definitely worth doing. But I'd written half a book. I was interested in the concept of emotional overdraft and this idea of subsidising your business at the cost of your own mental and physical wellness. And then the editor got hold of it and said, where's the rest of your book? And I said, well, what do you mean? This is a fantastic concept. It's life-changing for everybody. And she said, well, it is, but where are the answers? What do you do about it? And I'd sort of not written the second half of the book, so then I had to sit down, and it took me another nearly 2 years to write that because that was the difficult bit. And that's the bit that's got the traction with people, the bit that says, well, there are 10 drivers of an emotional overdraft that the research has thrown up, and these are things you can do about it. This is literally a list of things that you can do differently. And the brilliant thing about founders is that you don't need to learn new stuff. You don't need to go and buy books. You don't need to go on courses. Most of removing an emotional overdraft of that thing that's crushing you, that's making you feel stressed, you can get rid of by changing behaviours.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing easy about changing behaviour. That's why there's a whole subgenre of books about habits.
Yeah.
Because habits are really hard to change. But I think broadly, you can, if you can recognise what's going on, if you know what those drivers are, and, you know, spoiler alert, if you're thinking, do I have an emotional overdraft? You do, because about 91% of people in my survey did. So you're likely, if you're listening, you do have one. There's a self-assessment online at emotionaloverdraft.com where you can work out where your emotional overdraft actually occurs most. And then you can start being quite granular about what you can do about it. And that's the second half of the book. But it's also very common sense. So
yeah.
You can do something about this without, when you're under pressure and you're stressed and you're running a business and you're not getting enough sleep and you're snapping at your kids and someone's just resigned and a client's being difficult and you've got three proposals to send out and all those things are going on. Mm. You don't need some old bloke like me coming on saying, oh, by the way, read a 250-page book.
Yeah.
But you can do something about it and you don't have to learn new techniques. It's perfectly within your capability of changing it. So, and part of that is networking. Part of that is sharing how you're feeling, talking to other people, understanding how they're dealing with it. So that's why it's network generally or networking in specific terms is so important.
Yeah. And do you think that small business owners are particularly prone to have a large emotional overdraft?
Undoubtedly. I think undoubtedly because you are... I was talking to someone yesterday and he started off as a web developer and was very good at it. So clients started asking for more and so he took on two staff and then suddenly he had 10 staff. And he was running a business.
Mm.
But he was still trying to do the work. He was still trying to do all the jobs. He couldn't let go of stuff. He had imposter syndrome, self-confessed imposter syndrome. So all the time he felt he was only 22 or 23 at that point. So very young, very inexperienced. Yeah. He didn't feel he was qualified to talk to these big companies that were asking his advice. I think people who run their own businesses... Small businesses absolutely suffer from this. However, it's not a bad thing to have an overdraft. An overdraft exists in your bank for a reason, which is sometimes you need that extra bit of capacity, that extra little bit of money to draw on if you've got a big order or you need a little bit of cash flow or whatever. So an overdraft, including emotional overdraft, is not a bad thing in itself. The bad thing is when you don't repay it.
Yes.
So go into your emotional overdraft is fine. But come back out of it, pay it back off, make sure you don't just operate permanently in there because that's when burnout comes, that's when stress happens. It's a great thing. I used to lead pitches for huge bits of business in the organisations I worked for and we work all the hours you could find and I wouldn't see my kids for 2 or 3 days. But you do the pitch and at the end of it, you then go, okay, we've got to recognise, I need to plug back in. The way I describe it is like a mobile phone.
Mm.
If a mobile phone runs out of battery... You don't shout at the mobile phone and go, give me one more call. Give me just one more call. If the battery's gone, the battery's gone.
Yeah.
And we're the same. But we expect ourselves to just carry on and do one more call and do these. And we have to unplug and sort of pay back the overdraft because it's the most expensive borrowing financially you can get. And it's the most expensive way of operating your business emotionally and physically that you can do. So it's definitely one to be avoided.
Yeah. So your book talks about emotional overdraft and how to get yourself back on track, I guess, from that. But are there things that we can do to prevent it happening in the first place?
Oh, you're good. This is why you're a podcast host, Liz. That's a fabulous question. Yeah, there are. And I think in the first instance, it's recognised that it exists.
Mm.
So just having the label is useful. Just having... thinking to yourself, I wonder if I'm drawing on my emotional overdraft right now. I think understanding your personal drivers. So not everyone has, some people can work really long hours and very, Margaret Thatcher famously, didn't she have 4 hours sleep a night?
Something like that, yeah.
You know, maybe true, may not be, I don't know. But, was reasonably successful in her field, judging on your subject to your politics. So they care in different places. So the first thing I think I would say is recognise when you're in it, and that's why the label is so useful, the name.
Mm.
Understand where it's coming from, and that's when you can start to change behaviour. So if you're a JFDI, that's one of the drivers that my editor insisted we call it just flipping do it, but I call it something else. But JFDI behaviour is someone who's a doer. And if you're that sort of person, you're just going to get things done. You're going to get frustrated with, if you've got a few staff, you're going to get frustrated if they're not doing it as quickly as you would. You start micromanaging. There's all sorts of stuff that cascades from that. Mm. If you are that sort of person, one of my little tips is to say, admit it to your team or admit it to your family and let them call you out on it.
Mm.
And it's amazing how effective that can be, where someone goes, Andy, I think you've just moved into JFDI, or I think you've just been in doer mode, because it just stops you and you go, right, okay, now I could do something differently. Maybe I should be delegating this to somebody else. Maybe I should just let you get on with it. I've got other priorities. So I think knowing where your emotional overdraft happens allows you to anticipate it before it happens and then head it off. So that's probably the two strongest ways of doing it. It's not a bad thing. It's just a bad thing to live with an emotional overdraft. The other thing is, you might not think, you might be listening to this and going, I don't have an emotional overdraft, Andy. And that could be true. 9% of people I spoke to didn't.
Mm.
But you might inadvertently be borrowing from someone else's emotional overdraft.
Mm.
And that's where, that's the most insidious one in a way, because you don't realise it's happening. And that could be your partner or your kids. It could be your network, who, you know, your people who are supporting you, where you've just become a very one-way street.
Yeah.
So it's something, it is a universal issue, but be, you know, I have a very understanding wife, but I absolutely know in the past when I've been working hard, I have put her under immense pressure. Mm-hmm. I remember she once said to me, I like playing cricket, or back in the day I did. And she said, I was going to play two games in one weekend. So I was out for both days and we had very young kids. And she said to me, that's fine. If you need to play cricket to unwind, I understand that. But you should know that for me, it feels like purgatory. And she made it pretty clear to me that that was my choice. I hadn't realised, I hadn't thought. I was just so, I need to unplug. I need to go and just run around after a little red ball. I hadn't been thinking about the impact it was having on her. I knew it was hard, but I thought she was dealing with it. But with two little kids, purgatory is a pretty big word, isn't it?
I've been there.
Yeah, I mean, that was 30 years ago, so I still haven't forgotten. So it was. She's a wise woman.
Well, I've really, really enjoyed our conversation, Andy, and learning all about emotional overdraft, something I'm quite sure I've had from time to time. So if people want to get in touch with you, Andy, or buy your book, what is the best place for them to find you?
Oh, I think everyone knows where to buy a book. So Amazon or Waterstones or wherever you buy your books. I'd encourage you to go on to emotionaloverdraft.com and look at the self-assessment. That's where I'd go. It's free. It's a little, whilst we were developing it, we called it the Cosmo Quiz. It's like, I don't know if the Cosmo even exists anymore, Cosmopolitan magazine, but there used to be 50 questions.
Yeah.
You know, will your boyfriend be with you in a year's time type quizzes. It's a yes, no sort of quiz that produces a bit of analysis. So that's where I'd probably encourage people to go. But if you think you've got an emotional overdraft, if you've got a challenge, find me on LinkedIn or emotionaloverdraft.com and I'll happily talk to anybody about it.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much. And best of luck with your networking and your book sales. And thank you very much for being my guest.
Oh, thank you for having me, Liz.
Thanks for listening to Small Business Big Network. If you found this podcast useful, please do rate, review and subscribe. And don't forget to share it with the rest of your network too.